When you talk about retail, it's like, oh, is this looming? Like, oh my God, we're getting disrupted. Are we going to go out of business? Ah, it's like this fear. But then at the same time, what you see like some of these leaders do is that they kind of recede back and be like, okay, let's go into fear mode and let's try to keep what we have. When that's like the blockbuster way of thinking of like, we're going to, it's like when you're being disrupted, you have to kind of lean into the disruption so that you become disruptor, not disrupted. And with this kind of product, like you've seen, it's not only with voice, but with facial recognition and with, you know, analyzing foot traffic.
You're listening to AI in Retail, brought to you by Radiant. In each episode, we explore AI use cases and applications that will transform the future of retail. Here's your host, Trevor Sumner, head of AI and innovation at Radiant. Now let's jump right into today's episode.
Welcome to the AI in Retail podcast, where we talk about AI and how it's being adopted in retail with a special focus on how it is impacting the physical world, physical stores, and customers in those stores. So we do that by talking to tech visionaries and retail industry leaders who are ushering in the revolution that we are seeing in today's fast-changing retail landscape. I'm your host, Trevor Sumner, and today I have a very interesting guest, Sebastian Jimenez. He's the CEO of Rulavoice, a tech company using AI and natural language processing to improve sales associate conversations in the real world. I met Sebastian first at the ERA Tech Accelerator in New York City when he was first starting out and where I serve as a lead mentor. And you've come a long way. So I'm really excited to reconnect. Welcome, Sebastian.
Thank you for having me, Trevor. It was just awesome to be here. Most of all, awesome to talk again. We haven't talked in a while. So yeah, I'm excited, man.
Yeah. So explain to us what Rulavoice does.
Yeah. So Rilla is the leading speech analytics software for outside sales and service. So you think of people who sell luxury and luxury retail stores, or people who sell telcos, or people who sell products in homes, whether it's roofing or solar or pest control or windows and siding. People who sell to other people talking face to face. They record their conversations with the Rulavoice mobile app right from their phones or tablets. And then we use AI to automatically transcribe, analyze, and give them feedback to help them improve their sales and to help their managers do what we call virtual ride-alongs that are 100 times faster, better, and more productive than physical ride-alongs. So yeah, that's Rilla.
Okay, so you're monitoring these conversations on a mobile app. Like, to what end? What can you tell somebody in terms of those conversations that helps them train, improve, identify best performers?
So yeah, so we've got a retail crowd here. In retail, there's a lot of these brands who have these positions that are called field supervisors or field coaches, and their job is to literally go and visit stores to see if people are adopting the sales processes that the company has coached them on, whether it's for a new rewards program that they're trying to sell, or in luxury, they have like a very established process on how to sell handbags or how to sell jewelry, where you're supposed to ask these questions for discovery and present the product in a certain way. And the job of these field supervisors is to literally go visit the store and see if people, first of all, are complying with their sales process or their customer excellence experience. And what Rilla does is it allows these coaches to save all the time not having to travel to the store, because you don't have to listen to the whole conversation, because literally it gives you a report card automatically with natural language processing. Like, here's how they scored on your sales process or your customer excellence process. And here's the parts that they missed, and here's the parts that they did. So you get like a script kind of compliance is what we call it. And so you get to see exactly what they're doing, what they're not doing. And then what Rilla does is for you as a coach, it kind of helps you level up your game as a sales coach, because it also tells you what it is that your people are doing differently than the top performers in the team. So imagine if you have a company with 1,000 salespeople, you know who your top performers are, the ones with the highest conversion rate, highest average ticket, with the best customer experience ratings. Rilla understands how these people talk, their talk ratio, their talk speed, their patience, and it understands what they say specifically, for how long they talk about pricing at the end, at the beginning, do they build rapport, for how long do they do that? And then it starts giving the salespeople what it is that they need to be doing to be more like the top performers. And it tells that to the coaches as well. So,
yeah. Gotcha. So you may think you have a customer excellence process that's refined, but then you actually find that the top performers are veering out in these interesting ways, and you can learn from that.
Correct. And what one of the statistics that we found is that there is a certain level of process compliance that the top performers follow at 70% compliance. Usually what we've seen, we analyzed like 500,000 sales conversations, and we saw like, what were the patterns? One of the patterns was the top performers follow sales process 70% of the time. So, and then after 70%, there's like diminishing marginal returns. So it's kind of like Michael Jordan. He was one of the best basketball players of all time. He spent a lot of his time just like practicing the basics, like the dribbles, the layups, the passes. So that game time came in and that 30% magic, you know what I mean? Where you could kind of like do these tricks and stuff like that. So it seems to be somewhere with the top performers. You follow the process to a certain degree, but not perfectly. And then you get to play around a little bit.
I have to correct you there. Michael Jordan was the best player ever. Only player to win MVP scoring and defensive player of the year. If you can be the best player both offensively and defensively, you're the best player in history.
I mean, I watched the documentary. I agree too. So, I hate it.
I'm a New York Knicks fan. It's like the series just crushed me over and over and over again. And the Knicks were the most competitive, often took them to game six and game seven when they rolled over everybody else. So, yeah, no Patrick Ewing champion.
I can feel the pain.
Yeah. So let's go back. Okay, I can see all this data, the scorecards, report cards. I can see my top performers. It's helping me identify patterns. What are your customers seeing? Like, okay, they've got Rilla Voice. Does it typically see an increase in sales? What percentage? Like, what do you see as the, hey, you've reduced training time by X percent, sales go up by X percent. What are you seeing?
Yeah. So like one of our first customers, Chad Arnold, was one of our first sales managers using Rilla. The first thing that you see with Rilla first week is that you make your sales managers 30 to 50 times more productive with their time and with their coaching.
30 to 50.
And this,
that's a big number, 30 to 50 times more efficient. How do you measure that?
So we asked Chad, how did it go your first week of using Rilla? And Chad said, in my 15 years of being in sales, Sebastian, I've never seen a tool that saved me so much time. We said, why? He said, last week, I went on my physical ride along, right? I was able to see one salesperson and coach one salesperson. Today with Rilla, I was able to coach all of my six salespeople, right? So, and I said, that's a 6 times improvement. And he said, no, last week, it took me 6 hours to go out on visits with this one salesperson. Today with Rilla, I was able to see all of my salespeople, all the six, see all of their conversations, see exactly what they did right and wrong, exactly where they were kind of struggling, what they were doing well. I was able to do that in less than 50 minutes. So we went from one person to six, from 6 hours to less than one. So that's like almost a 36 time or more, because it's like less than 50 minutes, more than 36 times improvement in the productivity of Chad. And that was back when we were getting started, when the product was like still very kind of crappy and stuff. So
What about sales lift? What are you seeing in terms of like, hey, you typically are going to see X percent improvements in sales productivity?
So when you make your sales managers 30 to 50 times more productive at coaching, and they are coaching every single one of your reps every single day, every single time that they're having a conversation, the analogy that we give to customers is the sport of sales that you are playing. It's a sport like any other, where you have athletes, you have coaches, you have systems to try to win championships. But the only difference in the sport of sales is that when your players are out there playing, you don't have a coach on the sidelines that's giving them feedback and knowing exactly what's going right and wrong like you have in every other sport. With Rilla, you put a coach in the sideline every single time that the salesperson is talking. You have an AI coach in their pocket. So when you do that, our customers, what they typically see, and that's just 1 quarter after using Rilla, it's 30 to 50% improvements in conversion rates, in average tickets. We have a customer, we just did a case study. They did an A-B test where they put half of their sales team on Rilla, half of their sales team off of Rilla. The people on Rilla went up while the people on Rilla went down because of the recessionary market that we're going into. And they saw that the sales lift that they saw with Rilla amounted to $350,000 of annual revenue per rep. So every single rep on average was making $350,000 more for the company.
All right. So those are big numbers, because one of the things that I found really interesting is that you started in kind of mass retail, brick and mortar, and ended up in kind of in-home sales and services. So you're talking about a lot of, like you said, pest control, HVAC, contracting, home services. So those are bigger ticket items. Talk about, you started kind of excited about in-store brick and mortar retail. Yeah. What made you pivot in this direction?
Yeah. So we started in retail during COVID, right? So we literally launched Rilla as a speech analytics for physical retail in January 2020. That's when we launched. and then we grew for like 6 weeks. And then bam, COVID hit us. And at the time we were working, I am still excited about these retail concepts. I don't know if maybe the audience will remember the Beta stores and the Schofield stores and the Neighborhood Goods. And so that's the kind of retail that we were targeting, like this new kind of retail concepts. And I think they're still great concepts. COVID kind of put a pause to that because they had to shut down their stores. And then during COVID, people assume that we pivoted because of COVID. That's actually not true. I don't know if you remember, but ERA demo day, May 2020, my pitch was, imagine the billions of conversations happening offline in stores all across the country. Like, what is wrong with this guy?
It's funny because when I filmed Demo Day, it was remote. I filmed it in April thinking that we were going to be out by May. By the time it came out. And it was so funny because people are like, well, this guy's an idiot. But so
we kept going. We did not pivot because of COVID. We kind of kept going the offline route, and we were really excited about the retail channel and still are to a certain degree. What made us pivot is we saw that there were constraints in different kinds of retail sectors to making a product like Rilla work, right? We try to launch, but the use case back then was we are going to capture the conversations in the stores so that we can give you consumer insights and customer experience insights so that you can replace surveys and you can replace mystery shoppers and you can replace all these manual things that you have to do to understand what the customer experience in your store. And it was about consumer insights. We would capture things like brand awareness. You ask people like, oh, where did you hear about us? We would capture that. It was not about sales at all, right? And so we were going into the untraveled path, trying to figure out our way. And one of the things we started noticing is a product like this one, especially at the time, it requires a certain kind of margin to be able to like deploy. One of the funny conversations that we had, I was telling you before we started taping, it was like with Home Depot. They were super excited about the concept. We're going to record our in-store conversations with store associates. And then they asked me, how much does it cost? And I said, $100. And they said, per store? And I said, per employee. And then they said, per year? And I said, per month. And they just started laughing. They were like, so you want to charge us $300 million? And I said, huh? He's like, yeah, we have 250,000 stores. And I was like, yes, $300 million. And they basically explained to me that everything that they use for their inventory planning, their CRM, everything that they use in store associates, it cost them like $1 per employee per month. And so then I realized that there was this demand kind of supply mismatch, right? Because the price that the market was willing to bear for these kinds of retail stores was not commensurate to the cost of actually doing the speech to text transcription and the audio processing and all of the things, because it's really expensive to run this kind of AI product. So then we realized, okay, we have to go to like higher margin sales. And at the same time, we started noticing that I remember the time that we kind of, the aha moment, I was in a grocery store because we tried to solve the problem of margin by not putting the microphones on the associates, but doing the price per store per month and putting the microphone in the service desk at the grocery store. Because we said, if Home Depot can't bear the price for employee, they can bear the price for their service desk because those are really high valuable conversation. People come and complain. And so you just charge $100 per store. I was at a grocery store in Muncie, New York. It was like our first pilot in a grocery store. We had the microphone in the desk, trying to capture the conversations at the service desk of the grocery store, like people complaining about returning orders and stuff like that. Kind of like a call center use case, right? But in person. And my job at we had like this really crappy desk microphone, like the one that you have. Well, that was better. The hour, like way super crappy, like $10 microphone. We had it hooked up to an Android phone so that it could upload the audio to a cloud. My job at the time was literally to be in that grocery store. Every time the cable disconnected, I would have to go and connect the cable. And that was my job. I was the cable connector. And I was in person in the grocery store. And the microphone was a disaster. The pilot was a disaster. The audio was super noisy. There was like a printing press right next to the microphone with all this noise. This was a Hasidic Jewish grocery store. The employees were speaking to each other in Yiddish. The people spoke English and the other people spoke Spanish. It was a mess. And in this mess, I see this guy talking to the owner and I see he has a tablet. I'm thinking microphone. So I go and talk to him. I was like, hey man, what do you do here? And he goes, I don't work here. I'm a salesperson. And I said, what do you sell? And he said, I sell these little candy balls. And I said, so what are you doing here? He's like, I'm trying to talk to the owner, like what you're trying to talk to me. And I was like, why don't you call her? Why don't you just call her on the phone, a Zoom meeting? And he goes, oh, you think she's going to take a call from me or a Zoom meeting? And I look at her. She's like super busy organizing the shelves and stuff like that. And I said, how much money do you make a year? And he goes, in a good year, I'll make $250K. And I was like, what? Holy crap. And I was like, how much is this account worth? He was like, $3 million. And I was like, is this what you do all day? He's like, yeah, I have my territory. I visit the... And I said, why do you have this tablet in your hand? And he goes, well, this is where I take my notes. This is where I take pictures of the shelf. My CRM, I'm required to use this tablet. And I said, you have this tablet all day, every day. And he's like, yes. And I said, microphone. That microphone works. High margin. And I said, ding, ding, ding. It's field sales. Then we started going after field sales. And then eventually we landed in home sales, which was one of the best markets that we
could. I love that. And that's really kind of one of the lessons in entrepreneurship is that 90% of people pivot at some point during their journey. And you just got to be open to listening to the signals in the world about what's broken about what your initial idea and finding. But a lot of it's just attacking a space and then just like learning and then finding that little bit of nirvana, that serendipity that points you in the right direction. And I think it's really interesting to think that, okay, they're willing to spend $1 per employee per month. The question is, what could you get if you spent $10 per employee per month? Can you drive $10 in incremental margin, customer loyalty, LTV,
right,
et cetera?
Right.
There have been a lot of like products like Ask Sam, Theatro is another one. Do you see retail being able to, like, does anything change in the compute or the architecture so that this starts becoming more of a possibility?
Yeah. So two things. One, I already think that there are industries in retail that can bear this kind of price, because there's one of my learnings in exploring the retail was that I thought of it as an industry, but it's not an industry. It's a channel that different industries use. So there's fashion retail, there's telco retail, banking, and these are all different industries with their different cost structures, right? And so there's fashion and kind of like mass merchandising retail kind of thing. So I already think that there's industries in retail that can bear the price of like $100, even $200 a month for employees.
And you work with some banking and some higher value services, right? So I just want to be clear. It's not just all field sales. Yep.
Correct. We have a customer who does dental replacement, and dental replacement is a really high, and it's like a store, and you go in and it's like a whole store experience. It's medical, but not really, because it's like discretionary spending. I want to get my teeth fixed or whitened. And they have stores, they call them retail stores, and people come and visit them. And it's like super efficient because you don't have to go out there. You basically put all the cost of the customer to come and visit you. You know what I mean? You don't have to be traveling around. That's like a dental replacement's like a $20,000 per ticket. You know what I mean? Every time you, it's like a quick thing. There's a service component. You have to do it in person because obviously you're getting your teeth replaced. So it's like a great kind of model for physical retail. So every time I think of retail, I think of the different industries in retail. I already think that there's industries that can bear the cost. And I think that the bottleneck is going to be somebody like us creating, and it could be us, creating a, it's not just the margin that's the bottleneck, it's being able to keep track of the conversation in a noisy environment where you might be talking to multiple people at a given time. So like if you go to a Zara store, you will talk to the sales associate, you will go then and go to the dressing room, get changed, and then talk to somebody else. How do you keep track of that conversation with multiple devices, multiple people, so that you can kind of have like one cohesive thing? That's a big issue. But there's retail stores where you already have that kind of experience. If you go to a bank, you sit down with it and you are talking end to end with the same person at their desk. You know what I mean? So there are already kinds of retail that can bear. It's like Amazon. There were certain kind of industries that could take in e-commerce better than others. And you're still seeing grocery. It's like a hard thing to do for e-commerce. So there's already industries that can bear the cost. Moving forward, there will be innovations that will drive the cost down. Before, the bottleneck used to be speech to text transcription, which was super expensive. And the models that were out there were super inefficient. So it was a lot of compute. It was really heavy. OpenAI came out with Whisper AI, which they came out with this before ChatGPT. And I think it was September 2022. Whisper is like such an efficient model. It's a big model, like super accurate, especially for face-to-face conversations. So the cost of transcription has gone down considerably. Now you're looking at the cost of natural language processing, which is really expensive because GPT-4 is insanely expensive. So you have to wait for the cost to come down. So I think in the next 5 years, you will see the original use case for real, where you can actually go to Home Depot and say like, hey, it's going to cost you like 50 cents per employee or $1 per employee per month. You can actually capture all these consumer insights, all these interactions. It will happen. You just have to get the cost of natural language processing down to like.
I think that's right. I mean, if you look at how fast the natural language processing, the transcripting, the analysis, and how quickly it's advanced in just the last 18 months. There's a lot of talk about models being able to run locally on the tablet, on the phone.
Yes.
So you can take care of a lot of that without the cloud-based processing. You're basically leveraging the device itself for its compute power. And then, of course, there's also the kind of network and storage and all that's solved because you're going from voice, which is an audio file, to just text. So being able to distribute the compute to the edge, I think is going to change things as well.
And that's one of the big bottlenecks also, like in retail stores, there's a lot of retail stores that still have like very crappy Wi-Fi. So the more you see 5G deployment and people can actually use it without having to rely on these like very archaic Wi-Fi systems that are really difficult to replace. I think that there's a lot of things that are going to converge to actually make this a reality and even in mass market retail.
And even though that you haven't gone to that Home Depot mass market use case, you guys have 8-digit revenues. How fast did you grow last year, year over year?
687%.
687%. So super excited to reconnect. I was like, hey, what's going on? What are your metrics at? I was like, whoa. I was like, this is exploding.
Yeah.
And so bring you on.
Yeah.
And so when we first met, we talked a lot about privacy, right? And you know, your initial concept had just trying to get it out there, getting people to use it. I imagine you hit some privacy pushback and then you built a bunch of privacy features. Can you talk about the concern, like what you built to one enable privacy with this? And two, what do you think about the concerns about instrumenting the real world, such as our conversations?
Yeah, so a great question. Privacy was like probably the biggest pushback we had as a concept originally, right? And it's still like every single time we talk to customers, it's still like a concern. And when we think of privacy, we think of it in three ways. It's like, one is the legality. That's the simplest question of all, because that's like super clear. Then there's the, how are my customers going to feel with the fact that I'm recording their face-to-face conversations, which is a weird new concept that was not done before, right? That's something that we saw. That's a big innovation that Rilla brought to market, is that we just even started recording these face-to-face conversations. Like, they were never recorded before. Forget about the AI. Just having the recording was like already like a wow. Oh, we have something new here. And then the last one is, how are my employees going to feel about the fact that I'm going to be recording their conversations that were not previously recorded? The legality is the simplest thing. In the United States, at least, you have most states, 40 states out of the 50 are one-party consent states when it comes to in-person conversations. And then 10 states are two-party consent when it comes to like in-person conversations. Even in two-party consent states like California, it depends on the nature of the conversation. If you're in a conversation in public, in a quasi-public space, then it doesn't count as all-party consent because somebody can overhear you. So there's a lot of these two-party consent states have laws that say like, hey, if you're in a quasi-public space, it's fair game because you're talking and other people can hear you, so they can kind of record in quasi-public spaces. If you're in a private space, then you have to let the customer know you're going to be recording. And there's very easy ways to do that. And like, if you're going to visit a customer in their home, you could just like automate it and send them a little thing that says like, hey, just, you know, we're going to be recording that meeting. That's the easy part, the legality. The biggest kind of constraint that we see is brands or large companies kind of fearing what the customer response is going to be. Like, oh my God, I'm going to lose brand equity. I'm going to have a scandal like Facebook or something. I'm going to like be analyzing all these conversations and people are going to be like, oh, you know, these people are using my data. That's the biggest fear. What we have found from actual consumers, we've done this, is in California, we have a lot of customers who literally tell their customers, hey, just, you know, we're recording this conversation. They say it in person and they even track it with Rilla to see if their reps are saying this because they have to say it. 97.5% of the time, customers say, oh yeah, do what you got to do. No problem. Oh, okay. Fine. Yeah. Yeah, do what you got to. Nobody cares. Consumer like literally doesn't care. I think that this is because of COVID. People have been on Zoom and we are recording this and all of the Zoom calls are recorded. So kind of people have gotten used to the idea that recordings are taking place all the time. People have Alexas in their home.
You say that. I think a lot of us have agreed to kind of give up with the privacy, but the retailers are terrified. We have some technology, 100%. You know, using, we say optical sensors because it's a camera and we don't want to say camera, that like can tell how many people are walking by. We can do male, female, old, young. You can personalize and then see what content gets them to look at the digital screen and then break that down by conversion rate from walking by to looking to engaging, even sentiment analysis. So we have all these metrics of like what actually works. And so many people are like, no, we can't do anything that. And like, what do you mean? There's security cameras all over the ceiling. And I feel like part of... people are still playing scared, right?
Yes.
With a lot of new technologies and how to adopt them. And there should absolutely be some controls. Make no mistake, right? You can't get like Rite Aid just got in a lot of trouble because they were doing facial recognition.
Yep.
And if somebody stole something and they would go into a new store,
right,
they would alert the store managers. But the problem is their facial recognition was terrible. There was some bias there. And they started hassling a bunch of people who were just innocent. And they never adhere to the law of notification that they were doing facial recognition, which is, you do have to notify that. So I think there's just a lot of fear. But when I hear things like 30x productivity improvements, 300% increases in conversion, what does it take to get people over the hump? What are you seeing in terms of areas that are still untapped within retail to kind of instrument physical spaces, instrument kind of many of the opportunities that 85% of retail is still physical? So where do you see the opportunities or where people are playing it maybe a little too cautiously?
Great question and great way to frame this. And we saw this ourselves also with like, even in COVID, we were getting some of the biggest retailers. Like I mentioned, we talked to Home Depot. We talked to like a lot of these huge companies who were booking demos with Rilla. It was so funny. It was like a 4-person team at the time and they would book a demo and they'd be like, is this a real company? How big are you guys? I turned the camera and like the apartment that we all lived in. It was like, oh, there's Chris. He's my co-founder. I say, hello, Chris. That's my
I remember the Zoom calls that you and the co-founder in the same room. And I was like, oh, that's where good ones get started. The whole garage story, right?
And then these big companies were like, God damn it. This is a kangaroo shop. Man, what the
hell? Well, there is a bit of that. There's a bit of that. Like, do you trust these privacy concerns to a bunch of young guys who, like, I mean, look, I'll be very honest. You come off as cavalier. When we met at ERA, I thought the biggest issue for you was going to be kind of privacy and your ability to convince these guys that they should trust a bunch of Yahoos like you. And
No, and what you're saying is so true. I think that this is just one of the, it's like what I saw from talking to a lot of the retailers, which is, I think, part of the reason why the industry moves so slowly, is that there's a lot of this fear of change, of doing things differently, because it's almost counterintuitive, because you think like, okay, every time people talk about physical retail, you talk about it being disrupted. And like, when you talk about retail, it's like, oh, it's this looming, like, oh my God, we're getting disrupted. Are we going to go out of business? Ah, it's like this fear. But then at the same time, what you see like some of these leaders do is that they kind of recede back and be like, okay, let's go into fear mode and let's go into like, let's try to keep what we have. It's like the Blockbuster way of thinking of like, we're going to, it's like when you're being disrupted, you have to kind of lean into the disruption so that you become disruptor, not disrupted. And with this kind of product, like you've seen, it's not only with voice, but with facial recognition and with analyzing foot traffic. It's like they adopt it, but it's like very coy. Oh, we're going to do it, but we're going to anonymize the, and we're going to just get generalized foot traffic data. We're going to get generalized. And so I definitely saw that, definitely. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity there in embracing a lot of these new technologies. Like, you know, who always gets in trouble with the media and who never cares? Amazon. Amazon, they track their employees in the warehouse. They put like all these tracking devices. People are always publishing stuff about Amazon and how they're like these evil overlords. They don't care. They just literally call them the unstoppable path and they keep conquering. And I've had conversations with these kinds of brands that are, they want to push the envelope and they want to lean in. And like, when people ask me, are my salespeople, oh my God, how are my salespeople going to feel about this? I say, they're going to hate it 1000%. Like, we don't shy away from it. Absolutely, it's going to be uncomfortable to launch this. Your consumers are going to be fine. What people don't even consider is like your employees are going to absolutely hate this. They are not going to like to be recording their conversations. They're not going to like it at all. If there's people listening who were part of bringing in a call center speech analytics tool back in the 2000s and 2010s, there's a lot of friction there. Recording my conversations, especially face-to-face, I'm free and now the man is coming after me in my conversations. There's a lot of friction there. We don't shy away from it. If you want to get all the benefits and the 30x improvements in the productivity of your sales manager, you want to increase your conversion rate 30, 50%. There is humps with any new technology, especially with this one. So 1000%.
Yeah, I imagine that it's uncomfortable at first, but then when you see the results and potentially your quota and your commission goes up. You know, I also think like that's a big difference, right? You come off as a little bit cavalier about the privacy, but you haven't really talked too much about the privacy features, such as the calls are recorded, but then you kind of anonymize the voice. So it sounds like a CIA informant for the customer, right? So you couldn't identify the customer if you tried, right? So talk about a little bit. What makes you a good entrepreneur is you see the signals and then you react in an agile way. So whereas we're talking about retailers are slow to change, you see these things and again, pivot on a dime. So talk about all the privacy controls you put in place in reaction to those concerns.
Yeah. And that is such a funny thing because when we built all these features, people would assume it's like, oh, it's because of legality. It's not because of legality. It's not at all. It's because of this. It's almost like the temp brain, the human temp brain, just like going like, oh, I'm scared. So we have to build these like, literally, there's no other purpose for these features other than to assuage, oh, it's going to be fine. You know what I mean? One of the things that we did and we had to do was like, literally, for some of our big brand customers, you record the conversation, right? You record it. And then we had to get really good at this for other purposes, but it's like with face-to-face audio, one of the problems is that we called it multi-speaker, multi-noise, single channel. And you and I are talking, Trevor, right here. You talk from your microphone, I talk from my microphone. So this is multi-channel, multi-speaker, right? The audio separated. With our software, or the audio is just coming into one device, everything, the noise, everything. So we got really good at denoising the audio, understanding the different speakers in the audio. It's called speaker diarization. Then identifying voice identification, identifying the sales rep or the employee versus the customer in the audio. And we do this all with AI, literally just like one audio wave. And the AI has to say, this part of the audio wave is this speaker, this speaker, this speaker. It's a very hard problem. We did this. And one of the things we realized we could do is like, oh, people are like, oh, well, the customer, they're going to be afraid of the data, which they're not, but they think that they are. My customer's going to handle this, whatever. So they have this fear and we're like, oh, what if we just anonymize the voice of the customer and just make them sound like Barack Obama or Morgan Freeman? What if we do that? And they were like, oh, okay. So it's like, so you literally cannot identify who they are. If they heard their voice, they could not identify. What if we do that? We use this great company called Private AI to redact PII. So like they say their name, if they say their email, whatever, political affiliation, health status, like there's like these 50 plus categories of PII that we can redact from the audio and the transcription. And so you can anonymize the voice, you can anonymize the audio.
There's a lot of customers. Again, literally just to assuage this fear, it's like you could just take out the voice of the customer. If you just care about tracking whether your employees are actually following the sales process or not, we know who the customer is. We know the employees. Take out the voice of the customer. Turn it off. Boom. Gone. Find the audio. So, right?
It's amazing the amount of technology and technique that you can apply if you just don't take that first initial no. And so I think about our statistics, where, I mean, we're GDPR compliant. And as you know, that's a much higher and stringent kind of privacy regulation than what we have in the US, even the CCPA, the California Consumer Privacy Act. So, and it seems to be still an issue. And it's funny to me because, like you said, I go to Amazon or most other websites, they know kind of who I am. They know how old I am, they know where I live, they know how much money I make, they know what I buy, they know I have a dog, they know I'm married, they probably know my wife's pregnant at this point. And that's pretty much every site I go to. And it's like, oh, an anonymous 47-year-old male in front of a screen. That's too far, right?
Yeah. I just think that's part of this kind of laggard mentality where when change comes, you're afraid. And any change, I think this is just part of a broader trend. The disruption means it's disruptive, it's annoying, it's uncomfortable. So this is part of it, I would say.
Yeah. So we're coming up towards the end. And I mean, we've spoken really quickly, so I feel like we covered a lot of ground. Your excitement is infectious. What are you excited about as you looked at AI, natural language processing, computer vision in retail? What are you excited about kind of moving forward, either kind of real voice or just kind of generally from an industry perspective? I mean, if you do another year of 657% growth, I'm sure that's pretty exciting.
687, yeah.
Sorry, 687. Not to split hairs.
Last year, we've become one of the fastest growing startups in the world. And I like to track with, we're actually tracking right behind Amazon in terms of their sales numbers. We're ahead of Salesforce. We're ahead of a lot of the Cloud 100, ahead of Figma in terms of growth rate when they were at our stage. So my goal this year is to continue tracking with Amazon in their third year of sales. And if you guys go look up Amazon.
So what's that target number?
I think it's $157 million of annual recurring revenue that Amazon made in their third year of sales or something like that. So
that's your target this year is 157?
That's keeping track with Amazon. Yeah, you have to do that.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's a big increase. All right. Good luck to you.
So I said, we got it Amazon though. And so far we're right there. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. And in terms of the future, I think I don't know if we talked about this before when we started recording, but one of the things that I got into entrepreneurship. One of the first books I read was Zero to One by Peter Thiel. One of the things that excited me the most was this quote of him saying that the biggest innovations in the 21st century are going to come from people who bring the power of the internet from the world of bits into the world of atoms. And you've certainly seen that trend with people like Airbnb and Uber and Tesla who are bringing in technology to the physical world. I'm really excited about that. There are, like you said, 85% of commerce still happens offline. Amazon is innovating massively in different industries, and I think they're going to continue that growth. And I think that it will be true that e-commerce will continue to replace some form of offline commerce, and it'll continue to grow as a proportion of commerce. But what I also think is true, and even more true, is that the rate at which technology will replace offline will be much slower than the rate at which technology comes into the offline to make the offline better. And the proof for that to me is the rate of e-commerce growth is much slower than the iPhone. So the iPhone, if you live in a world where in the metaverse, we're all trapped at home, this product makes no sense, right? And so I'm definitely part of this. We're going to go outside and people are going to continue to live offline. And if we can bring tools to the offline world to make people better, not replacing what they do completely, but enhancing it, I'm a fan of AR more than VR because I think AR kind of it makes human beings bionic in their natural habitat. And I think that's awesome. I think it logically makes sense, but also from a sentimental perspective, it's I do not want to live in a future where people are stuck at home and just being dystopian matrix future. I'd rather live in the future where we're going out
and
and being Iron Man kind of thing. You know what I mean? So I think my big hope for Rilla is that we can be a part of that and help make salespeople bionic and sales managers bionic. I'm so excited for the glasses, as I'm sure you are also. I think when the glasses come out, a lot of this, how these people are coming out with the pendants that you can record your entire day with an AI assistant. These big brands realize that consumers don't give a crap about recording their entire day, I think they're going to be more in social media. They were late to social media, but 10 years later, they were getting on it. I think they're going to get on it once they realize consumer adoption's there. So I'm excited for all these new tech gadgets. The glasses are so awesome. there's so many opportunities. But yeah, technology will come to the offline faster than technology will replace the offline. So yeah.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, like, there's some kind of exciting things like retail media online has already gotten pretty saturated. There's like social shopping and live shopping, which hasn't really taken off so much in the US, but we'll get there. What is that going to eke out? Just, you know, you're talking about a percentage point difference on your e-commerce. And ultimately, I find the physical retail landscape to be so ripe for opportunity for enhancement augmentation or really just kind of disruptive revolution. And so, you know, you go to a grocery store, it's the same grocery store as 50 years ago. And like, there's got to be ways that we can better leverage technology. And we're starting to see things, the Instacart deeper carts. You're starting to see trying to insert technology into old things. And ultimately, I think they're going to be disruptive things that really change the way we think about the physical world. And I agree with you. We have to recognize that human beings are physical beings, and we have to recognize that humanity to get the most out of a positive shopper experience as well as just a meaningful life. And so, I think we can do that while leveraging technologies such as Rilla Voice, instrumenting the physical world, seeing insights in new ways, making every touch point better, making salespeople the Iron Men, bionic super salespeople that you are, and then making us the super shoppers that we want to be to experience the world overall. So I share that. I thank you so much for being on the pod. If people want to follow up with you, how do they connect with you, Sebastian?
Go to rillavoice.com. That's R-I-L-L-A voice.com and book a demo, and you will talk to one of our highly trained salespeople who have been trained with the latest in AI technology because we coach them with Rilla. Because I need to talk.
Absolutely. Actually, when you hear the anonymized voices, when you see the transcript, when you see all of it, it's actually really impressive thinking about the data that's available to you. So I highly encourage everybody to do that. Sebastian, thanks so much for being on. It's so good to see you. 687% growth, tracking with Amazon to 150 million and beyond. I was really excited to reconnect with you and see that you're doing so well. Your enthusiasm, your smile really comes through. It looks like you're having a good time doing it. So thanks again.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to AI in Retail, brought to you by Radiant. For the latest episodes, please visit www.brickandmortarreborn.com or search AI in Retail on your podcast platform of choice.